Hello, and a very warm welcome to No Heathen Land, a podcast retelling macabre, intriguing, and just plain weird stories from the past, from God's own country, Yorkshire. In my opinion, Yorkshire is the perfect breeding ground for the most weird and wonderful tales. In Yorkshire, we have the rolling, vast countryside of the dales, dark, tangled woodlands, remote back roads, but also industry, hard labour, a history of staunch religion, farming, tight-knit communities, immigration, a welcoming attitude, intolerance, riots. Much of this documented, a vast amount not. It's the stories in between the newspaper headlines that I really want to get into. Through my experience working in local history, it's really quite surprising how many odd tales you come across simply by looking into one single person's family history, for example. A newspaper article, a diary entry, a theatre playbill, a photograph. I'm very lucky to have made friendships and connections with interesting and enthusiastic people right here in Yorkshire. Each episode will feature one of them as a very special guest, where we'll delve into some of the stories we've come across that have fascinated, baffled, and sometimes unnerved us. Because of the subject nature of this podcast, some stories will not be suitable for everyone. Approach with caution. You have arrived at No Heathen Land. Welcome back if you're a returning listener, and hello if you're new to this podcast. I'm very happy that you're here. Actually, I'd like to know where you're listening from. I've had a really good amount of downloads since the podcast started, which I'm delighted about, but where are you guys and how did you find out about the podcast? Especially if I don't know you, I'd love you to come and say hi over on the Twitter page. The handle is @NoHeathenLand, and as I said before, if you have any suggestions for stories to cover, I would love to hear them. This is my Halloween in retrospect episode. I intended to get this recorded and out in time for Halloween this year, but as often happens in life, that didn't go to plan. But it's always spooky season over here, and it's my flipping podcast, so I'll do what I like. So I've invited original friend of the podcast, Dr. Ross Horsley, spook extraordinaire, back for this episode. In this chat, we share ghost stories from two different sources. I share stories from Yorkshire newspapers, one terrifying tale from Yorkshire folklore, one letter to the newspaper, and one delightful poem of sorts. Ross shares his top 10 fictional ghost stories with the Yorkshire connection from what I can only imagine is his vast vault of horror books and movies. And speaking of movies, at the end of the episode we share our 2021 October picks, which in my case was pretty poor. But as I said, it's never too early or too late in the year to get spooky. Now, there is, of course, a small section of noise interference in this episode, and I think at this point I just have to own the fact that I'm not very professional and my life is noisy and chaotic, I guess. There's a very, very short bit of background noise at the beginning, there's a siren, and there's some people shouting outside where we were recording. I can only assume they were desperate to get into Ross's flat and join in our conversation. Another noise interference comes later on, which we do address at the time, and that is Ross's incredibly sweet cat, Jeannie, sitting as close to my dictaphone as possible and doing a bit of snuffling and grooming. I'm hoping by now that it's charming, that I just let these noises stay in the podcast, but if not, sorry, I guess, and maybe one day I'll have a proper setup. Anyway, without further ado, here is the Halloween in retrospect episode of No Heathen Land. I'll be back at the end. Enjoy.
Welcome back to No Heathen Land, Ross, Dr. Ross Horsley, that's what I called you in the last one. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Good. Thank you for having me back.
Has your life absolutely changed completely since you came on the podcast the first time?
It has, autographs everywhere I go.
Well, you just told me that some of your volunteers were listening.
This is true. I was chatting away to a couple of my volunteers and they started telling me about a podcast and they'd been surprised that I was on it. So they obviously weren't listening to it for that reason, which is in itself very surprising. But they loved it. They really... Well, they heard Josh's story about the woman who was present at her own murder trial and they just couldn't stop talking about it.
Yeah, well, Josh will do that with his tales. So I wanted to get Ross back on the podcast to do a Halloween episode, but we didn't get around to doing that. So we're coming back to it as a Halloween retrospect because we had a couple of ideas of what we wanted to talk about. So today is going to be a little bit of a mix of spooky stories, I guess. It's all got a spooky story theme, and obviously it's all Yorkshire. So I'm going to be sharing three stories from the Yorkshire Post. They're all from the 1920s, and there was a segment in the Yorkshire Post, and I think the Evening Post, called Yorkshire Ghost Stories. And if you ever look them up, you can see these like beautiful headings on the top. So the one that I've got here is like a tree, and like the sort of like bubbly writing over the top, and that's 1926. But then some of them have got like a witch on the side, and some are in really swirly writing. Do you remember all the different like headers on
that? I used to love those. They are brilliant, and yeah. I think those illustrations really make it, don't they? Because
yeah.
they're so spooky, and the stories are written in such a dramatic style. I used to find myself flipping through just to find the next one.
Yeah. So I've got one sort of ghostly story, and then the other two one is a letter to the newspaper, and then one is a sort of rhyme, which is at the end, which is kind of the best one, I think. It's the fun, most fun.
I can't wait.
But yeah, I think what I'll do on the Twitter page is I'll post some pictures of the headers of the Yorkshire Post articles because they're just so lovely. And then Ross is going to be sharing his top 10,
yeah.
and I can't believe that there's even 10 of these, top 10 spooky ghost stories that have a Yorkshire connection.
Yes, so these are all fictional stories around Halloween time, in fact, around the entirety of October these days. All I do is read ghost stories. And I noticed actually this time when I was reading something, a few did jump out that I hadn't read before and that did have this local connection. And then I thought, do you know what? I'm going to round it up to 10, see if I can find some more. And I did, and they are all really good. So if... Well, you know, you've missed Halloween now, but if you are the sort of person who likes to read ghost stories around Christmas, then these are all the ghost stories that you should be putting on your Christmas list this year.
Well, I'm going to go and read them. I doubt that I've read any of them. You did send me the list, and I don't think I've read any of them. One of them has got a very excited author that I want to talk about.
Okay.
Well, just about, it's just about his name.
I think it's the name, isn't it?
Because it's so good.
And he is local, and that is his real name.
Yeah. I can't wait. So, right. We'll just get straight on with it. I am also going to put a picture on the Twitter of Ross's cat, Jeannie, who is conveniently sat right next to the dictaphone today.
So if you hear any purring, it's not us.
He looks very content there, being a little loaf. So my first story is The Headless Steeds of Calverley Woods. So people might know the Calverley ghost story that this comes from, and it is explained very briefly in the end of this article. We can have a quick chat about it afterwards because it's something that, from working in local history, I think we're both quite familiar with. But I will get on with The Headless Steeds of Calverley Woods, and this is from the Yorkshire Post. This is the 25th of September 1926. Approaching 10 o'clock on a brilliantly moonlit night, a sturdy villager across the air by stepping stones at Appley and turned along the boulder-strewn path through Calverley Woods to the village. The companionable murmuring of the river and a gentle soughing of the trees alone broke the silence of the night. The pedestrian was a stolid fellow whose mind was pleasurably anticipating a foaming tankard at the village alehouse. The beauty of the woods by night, no appeal, and the old wise tale of fearsome apparitions were far from his thoughts. Suddenly, a clatter and jingle of horses broke his ear. He paused a moment to listen. The noise was no imagination. Instantly the stories of phantom horsemen rushed into his brain, and despite himself, his cheek blanched. From the heart of the woods ahead, and a little to the right hand, came the sound of madly riding cavalcade. I can never say that word. Cavalcade. Nearer it came, and nearer. There was the ringing of iron-shod hooves, and the jingle and slap of leathern horse gear, and ever anon there hurst forth cries, the demoniacal laughter which caused echoes to resound far and wide. Terrified, the lonely villager crouched behind a friendly rock. He appeared in the direction from which came the unearthly sounds, and there along the brightly illuminated glades he saw the dim shapes of four horsemen sweeping towards him. Galloping wildly onwards, they approached the terror-stricken watcher, perceived that the distant trees could be clearly discerned through the gliding bodies of the horses and their riders. Suddenly he saw all four horses were headless. Did you like that?
I did.
Dramatic. Clutching a dripping dagger high in his right hand, the foremost horseman rode straight for the rock behind the villager crouched. His headless steed cleared the stones with a mighty bound and crying, "Upon more weight, leg on," he galloped out of sight. His companions uttering shrieks of mirth followed, and quickly all were swallowed up into the fastness of the woods. The terrified man, without a glance behind, ran as though for his life, and eventually fell fainting into the parlour of an inn. In the parish register of the pretty village of Calverley, under the date 1605, is the entry of a double burial. It reads, April, William and Walter, sons of Walter Calverley, Esquire. And thereby hangs the tale. Walter Calverley, lord of the manor, foully murdered his two young sons in that year, and as punishment for his dastardly crime, suffered death by pressing at York. This method of execution was horrible in the extreme. The criminal was laid naked on the floor with a sharp-edged stone beneath his back. A wooden platform was then placed upon him, and on this platform enormous stones were piled slowly, until at last, after excruciating torture, the victim's ribs burst and he died. It's recorded that so terrible were Calverley's sufferings that in order to hasten death, he continually cried with his executioners to pile on more weight. A pile more weight, leg on, leg on.
Oh, so that's what the headless heed was heard to say.
Yes.
That's such a good story.
Why
are there four horses? Oh, he's the rider, and then there's four horses.
There's four horses without heads?
Of course.
Because I kind of thought that the people riding the horses should have no heads, but that's...
It's the horses.
Is that just from Sleepy Hollow that I'm thinking about? The headless thing. Yeah. Yeah, I love that story. And I actually heard that story, the story of the Calverley man, William... Walter Calverley. From you, I think, quite many years ago, you told a story at a talk or...
That's
something.
Right. Yeah, it was. I think it was simply called Yorkshire Ghost Stories. I obviously nicked the title from this newspaper, and that was definitely one of the ones included. I remember having a little map of Calverley, and you could see the way through the woods. It's just a straight line,
exactly,
isn't it? Straight through the woods.
Yeah. So that is apparently it's a true story, isn't it, from 1605, that this man murdered his two sons, and now there's a haunting in the woods. Do you know the reason why he killed his two
sons? I feel like... We should do
that too. Maybe I should look that up.
I think you're right. I think that the parish record stands and the story's true. We just need to know why he murdered his sons. There must be a reason.
Yeah, but I mean, I think people remember it because of the way that he was executed, because that is grim.
And naked as well. I mean, just to make it worse. I mean, that's bad enough, but then they put a massive stone on him.
Yeah, and then got squished to death. Ooh. Yeah, so that's my first story, and I just love how, I mean, I don't think I told it particularly well, I stumbled over my words a bit, but I love how it's told. It's so dramatic and so atmospheric, and on this article, which I will post a picture of, there's a lovely Yorkshire Ghost Stories header with the tree in the background, and then in the middle there's a really lovely sketch of Calverley with a horse and a foal on it.
Oh.
They're not headless. But in the background there's a church and a tree and a lovely house, which doesn't really represent the story, but it's nice. So we move on to some of Ross's spooky tales.
Ooh,
so do you want to do your first five? Are they in any kind of order?
No.
Have you read them? Okay.
I kind of thought I'll start with one where not only is the story set in Yorkshire, but the author is also from Yorkshire, and in fact from Leeds. The author sort of was at one point quite famous. He's called William Fryer Harvey, and he was born, as I say, in Leeds. Actually, I think he might have been born in Ilkley. He definitely grew up in Ilkley, near the moor. Have you ever heard of a film called The Beast with Five Fingers? It's a Hollywood film from, I don't know if it's from the 30s or 40s now, I suspect the 40s. But it was quite a big deal at the time. And the I guess that title is such a great title.
Yeah.
That, of course, The Beast with Five Fingers is actually a disembodied hand. So it's quite Evil Dead. There's people being chased around by this kind of thing-like creature. And he wrote that story that Hollywood film was based on. And in fact, he wrote three collections of ghost stories, as far as I'm aware. And the first one is a beautiful book that they have a lovely kind of early edition of in the Central Library called Midnight House. And in Midnight House, which is published in 1910, there's this fantastic little story called Across the Moors. And it's one of those typical kinds of ghost stories where it's a bit like, you know, the Phantom Hitchhiker, where somebody picks up somebody that turns out to be a ghost. I'm not going to spoil anything about this one, other than to sort of set you up with that idea that it involves somebody who's travelling across the moors. In this case, it's a young woman who's been sent out to kind of fetch the doctor. And the story's about what happens and who she meets on the moors. It's a really good, spooky little story. I don't think it'll shock you with its twists, but I think if you read it, you'll love its atmosphere.
Yeah.
And the other reason I kind of was particularly interested in sharing this story is because of the story of the author himself, William Fryer Harvey. Not only was he, you know, a very notable writer, but he also had this incident that happened to him in his life that, I mean, honestly, it is way up there in terms of things that could happen to you. It's so shocking. He was involved in the First World War.
Mm-hmm.
He actually won something called the Albert Medal for Life-Saving. Which is it's a bit like a Victoria Cross. It's not one that's given out lightly. And I'm going to read you the citation of why he received it. Because, yeah, it is quite the story. So this was published in the paper. And as I say, it's the official citation. I really couldn't tell the story any better than they did when they awarded him his medal, which I think you'll agree is probably justified. So it says, on the 28th of June, 1918, two of His Majesty's torpedo boat destroyers were in collision. And Surgeon Lieutenant Harvey was sent on board the most seriously damaged destroyer in order to render assistance to the injured. On hearing that a petty officer was pinned by the arm in a damaged compartment, Harvey immediately went down and amputated the arm, this being the only means of freeing the petty officer. The boiler room at the time was flooded and full of fumes from the escaping oil. This alone constituted a great danger to anyone in the compartment, and Harvey collapsed from this cause after performing the operation and had to be hauled out. Moreover, at any time the ship might have broken in two, and all hands were fallen in on deck wearing life belts at the time in order to be ready for this eventuality. Harvey displayed the greatest gallantry and disregard of his personal safety in descending into the damaged compartment and continuing to work there amidst the oil fumes and flames at a time when the ship was liable to sink.
Wow.
Can you imagine?
That's mad. They could make a film about him.
I know. It's yeah. It's incredible. I mean, he's a real hero, basically.
Wow.
He
cool.
He never really recovered from this incident in terms of his health. I think he had lung damage from it. But as I say, he went on to write The Beast with Five Fingers after this. You might even say maybe that partly inspired that story of an amputated hand. I think he moved to Switzerland for a bit after that.
Well,
but,
why not?
Yeah, he didn't live a very long life. Mainly because of, I think, the trauma and the injury from this incident.
Yeah.
But
wow,
what a notable
amazing
author.
Yeah.
So after that one, as the story that I picked next was a bit lighter in tone, but it's also from another local author, and that's the famous author J.B. Priestley, who is from Bradford.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a story of his. He's not really known for his ghost stories, but he has written apparently some, you know, sort of supernatural tales. And actually, he also wrote a book called Benighted, which later got filmed as another classic Hollywood kind of horror film called The Old Dark House.
Another one I haven't seen.
It's fantastic.
I'll watch it.
They showed at the film festival recently, actually, but of course during the day, so I couldn't go. But it's the way it's filmed, it's quite a weird little story, and it's done with a real kind of sort of camp edge.
Mm.
They showed at the film festival under a strand called Queer Fear,
yeah,
because it does have this
interesting
subtext. And actually this story as well that I picked is quite camp.
Okay.
It's called The Demon King. It's was published in the Strand magazine in 1931, but you'll find it anthologized. Have you ever seen these British Library Stories of the Weird, I think they're called? They've
Ooh,
been publishing
yes,
them
so.
Have you seen them? They're fantastic. There's a lovely one that they did for Christmas. I think it's called Spirits of the Seas or something like that. Mm. And this is in that one. So it's actually a really easy story to get hold of.
Mm.
And what I like about this one is that J.B. Priestley is clearly spoofing Bradford a little bit in it.
Oh.
Because it's set in a little fake town called Brudersford. And I think, obviously, coming from Bradford, he's allowed to do this.
That's so funny. Just a note that Ross's cat is being unbelievably cute, and he's kind of like gone upside down, but he's looking at us with big saucer eyes.
He'll do a thing in a minute where he puts a paw over one eye but continues to stare at you with the other eye.
Oh no, we've settled back down. Are you going to sleep? Yes. Okay.
He's the quietest cat ever. Like, people will think he doesn't exist.
He's very cute. Yeah, some pictures of Genia going in the notes. He's just so cute. Anyway, that was very distracting.
And Genie is quite distracting. But the Demon King is... It's not an out-and-out ghost story, but it's definitely spooky enough to meet the criteria. And it's set in a theatre, and it's about what happens on the opening night of a pantomime on Boxing Day. So absolutely save the story for Christmas. You can guess from the title that there's something a little bit devilish going on. And I just thought I'd pull out a few sentences, really, that I actually think are quite funny. And as I say, only somebody who's actually from Bradford could get away with it. But he describes the theatre and the audience in this lovely way. He says, "The Brudersfordians are notoriously difficult to please, not so much because their taste is so exquisite, but rather because, having paid out money, they insist upon having their money's worth, and usually arrive at a place of entertainment in a gloomy and suspicious frame of mind. Really tough managers like to open a new show in Brudersford, knowing very well that if it will go there, it will go anywhere."
That's fun.
I feel like that's me every time I go to the theatre. I love going,
this
but I always arrive.
This is terrible.
Yeah, I've got that gloomy and suspicious frame of mind. I'm usually won over in like 2 minutes flat,
yeah.
But it's just so accurate. And the whole story's still told in that kind of amusingly sort of wry tone. It's a great little story.
Yeah.
It cheered me up when I read it.
Hmm.
Would you like another?
Yes, please. We've got time for three more.
Oh,
and then I'm going to do another ghosty, spooky story. It's actually very short, but yes.
I hope you don't mind that I'm not telling you much about what happens in the story.
No, this is encouraging people to go and read the books.
I would absolutely recommend all of them, and that's kind of why I don't want to give too much away. They're all quite short stories. So, yeah, much discussion really does potentially spoil them.
Mm-hmm.
But there's one that I only became aware of this Halloween, actually, that is set at Bolton Abbey.
Ooh.
Have you been?
Yes, I have been. It's beautiful. I went on my birthday
really?
A couple of years ago, and my birthday's early January, and it was absolutely freezing, and there was no one there. And they've got the amazing little bookshop next to the Abbey.
Yes.
And a guy in there was just going out to buy wine. Him and someone else was working in there. They had the fire on. It was amazing.
What time of day was this?
Oh, it was like at lunchtime.
That guy has the life.
That's the life
I
want.
Gosh.
So yes, it was very beautiful when we went, and everything was like frozen. It was lovely.
That sounds amazing.
It was really good.
I used to go when I was a kid. My parents took me and my sister. And then I went sort of for the first time, as you know, like everyone tried to have a lockdown holiday last year and you couldn't really go anywhere, but you tried to go away for a night, and we went to nearby, and we went to Bolton Abbey again. And we walked along the river there, which is the River Wharfe, and there's a part of it, and I remember seeing the signs that it's like, "This is really dangerous, do not get in the river or she'll be sucked into a cave and mangled," or something like that. And it is actually...
the right signage.
It is actually apparently accurate, because this bit of the river, which I think it's called the Strid.
The Strid.
It's famous. And I googled it recently. Mm-hmm. And let me look. Yeah, one of the articles that came up was called "The Most Dangerous Stretch of River on Earth." So that is here in Yorkshire.
Yeah, we walked around, you know, because it's all... Everything's sort of like high up and you walk around it, don't you?
Mm.
I've definitely got a picture of this
Strid. Yeah. Well, there's a ghost story to go along with it.
Oh, I should have known it
And it's great. It's from 1896,
mm-hmm.
and it's by Gertrude Atherton, who's an American mm-hmm. author. She actually revised it a couple of times, I think. So the version that I read might have been from 1900.
Mm-hmm.
But it's called, I think, again, it's gone by different titles, but you'll find it under the title The Striding Place. And I think that's what the Strid is a contraction of, basically.
Yeah.
And actually, I came across this story via, there's this little online event that happens every year called Ghost Story Advent.
Ooh.
And it's by the playwright Adam Z. Robinson.
Oh, yes.
Who does the Book of Darkness and Light.
Yeah.
So he usually either compiles himself or gets some guest editors to kind of come up with some good ghost stories to read at Christmas. And I came across this one as a result of that, and it's such a good story and such a strong Yorkshire connection. And obviously it involves some quite spooky goings-on around the Strid.
Mm.
And I don't think it's much of a spoiler to say that somebody is killed in the Strid in a fairly gruesome way.
Ooh.
And it's quite a deep little story. It discusses kind of, you know, that what happens to the soul after death, and ends on this really disturbing, ambiguous note. It's a great story.
Do you know if the author of the story, if it's an American author, she lived here or she just visited? So what a thing to take away from
absolutely.
The country.
I know. And actually, I'm not sure whether she lived here or whether she clearly has visited.
Yeah.
Because the descriptions of the Strid are spot on. And she, you know, she's obviously been inspired by a visit herself. She's not an author I'm that familiar with, actually, but I'm really glad she appears on this list, especially, you know, the time she's writing and putting a good ghost story out there.
Very interesting.
I'd definitely read more by her.
Mm.
So my next story, you could say that the connection to Yorkshire is a little bit tenuous, because it's not the author, it's not the story itself, it's a real life figure who is mentioned in the story. The story is called The Waxwork, and it's from 1935, and it's by A.M. Burridge, who, as I say, isn't local, but is quite well known, I think, for his ghost stories. And I came across this story in a really brilliant collection that was edited by Boris Karloff, of all people. He obviously knew his stuff, because the whole collection's brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
So if I tell you that the story is set in a kind of Chamber of Horrors kind of waxwork exhibit, what do you imagine might be going on in the story?
I imagine that one of them is alive, or all of them are alive.
Yeah, you're spot on. This story absolutely plays on that fear of waxworks coming to life. And it's about a reporter who, he's not like challenged to spend the night there. He's looking to make like some quick money off an easy story. Mm. So he's like, I'll spend the night in the Chamber of Horrors. I'm not going to tell you what happens and who he encounters. But one of the waxworks in there is Charles Peace, who is a criminal who's quite associated with Leeds.
Oh.
Definitely Yorkshire. He's from Sheffield.
Oh.
He was a burglar. He was a murderer. He basically had a life of crime, killed a policeman in Manchester and was chased all over by police. Ended up in Leeds. He was actually executed in Leeds. He was hanged at Armley Prison. So he's quite a famous local figure, and you can spot like references to him, not just in this story, but in quite a lot of kind of pop culture from you know, the last century. But he's faded into obscurity a little bit now. But I loved coming across this little mention of him amongst the murderers in the Chamber of Horrors in the Waxwork.
Oh my God.
Because his story itself could make a podcast. It's
definitely
quite a dramatic tale.
Can you imagine? I mean, I know that there are those kind of figures in waxwork museums, but I like morbid things, but it's so morbid, isn't it?
This story really plays on, I think, that idea that why are we fascinated by murderers?
Yeah.
And what would happen if you met a murderer?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I went to the torture museum, of course I did, in Bruges.
Oh, God.
Which it's good. It's bad and good. I think it's been there a really long time, and like it's really interesting. It's obviously horrifying, but it's really interesting because you get to see like all the ways that like people have been killed and tortured in like from medieval times up until like the electric chair, basically. But the waxworks there are really bad.
I was just going to say,
it's got loads of pictures
waxworks.
Of us posing next to these like really terrible like 1970s waxworks. They're like melting. But it's good to visit if you go, like if you like history and horrible things. It's a good place to visit.
I can't decide whether the fact that they're kind of bad makes them even creepier.
Oh, it definitely does. Yeah. After this, I'll show you a picture of one of them, because it's very good. And this is a bit of an aside, but speaking of like waxworks and serial killers, did you know that, I mean, I'm not going to talk about him much because it's not worth it, but the Yorkshire Ripper Peter Sutcliffe was obsessed with a waxwork museum.
No, I didn't.
I can't remember where it was, but there was a really terrible waxwork museum that it was really, really badly done, and I think it got shut down. But it was like infamous for being terrible, and he was obsessed with the waxwork museum.
Gosh, and do you know if it was local?
No, it wasn't. I don't think it was that far away. I will find out and I'll put it in the description, but that's true, apparently. And he was obsessed. I think his brother lived near it.
Right.
And whenever he visited his brother, he had to go to this waxwork museum.
Well, he would absolutely love the story, the waxwork.
Well, yeah. A little aside there.
I will share with you my fifth and last story from this little section.
Yeah.
And this is the one with the author whose name you absolutely love.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to share that name?
Yeah. So this is Mr. or Monsieur, I'm going to call him Monsieur, Oliver Onions.
Do names get any better than Oliver Onions?
They really, really don't.
I think he was obviously quite proud of this name because, you know.
I would be so proud of him.
He's also from Bradford, is Ollie Onions. And he's got quite a famous and widely sort of reprinted ghost story called The Beckoning Fair One, which is bordering on being a novella. People might actually consider it a novella. But it's not the one that I picked from him, even though it is brilliant. The one that I picked by him is also quite a long short story, and it's called The Rope and the Rafters. What a great title.
That is good.
Great author's
That's
name,
like
great title.
Agatha Christie, isn't it, that?
Yeah. I mean, even when you just hear the words The Rope and the Rafters, you're already halfway there making up your own story. And, you know, as you'd expect from Oliver Onions, if you've read The Beckoning Fair one, this is quite a complex, multi-layered kind of psychological story. It takes in, you know, questions about identity, injustice. And what I love about it is it addresses something you don't always get that deep into in ghost stories. And that is, where do ghosts come from? How are they made? How do you become a ghost? This story is all about that. And it kind of doesn't wimp out either. It's a really tragic, really disturbing, as I say, really multi-layered story. It's basically the sort of one sentence description is, it's about a disfigured ex-soldier after the First World War who kind of has nowhere to go, nothing to do except hole up in this French chateau somewhere outside of Paris by a friend who lets him but refuses to see him because she wants to remember him as he was, not as he is. And yeah, so he obviously encounters a ghost, but the story is much deeper than it sounds. And if you fancy one that you really can get into the atmosphere of, this one will probably take you two good solid nights of spooky reading at Christmas. It's one to really look out for.
That sounds good. And Oliver Onions, what year did you say that was?
Well, that one's actually was published in 1935.
Okay.
That's
peak spook time though.
Oh, definitely. But yeah, this story caught me by surprise. It's an underrated one.
Mm-hmm.
And it's definitely one to look out for.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm going to do my second Yorkshire Post article. So I lied when I said these were from the 1920s, because this is not, it's from 1933. And it seems like they did a little call out for people to send stories in. So I'll just preface this with what it says in the article. It's very short. So this titled, Ghostly Sight Through a Window, and the date is the 15th of July 1933. So it says here, contributions to Notes and Queries are invited, and each week a prize of half a guinea is awarded to the sender of the most interesting letter published. In order that a variety of topics may be discussed, correspondents are requested to make their letters as brief as possible. One side of the paper only should be written on. This week's prize goes to the writer of the first letter published. And here is the letter. The Temple Newsome ghost reminds me of another local ghost story, the scene of which is a small house in the Chapeltown end of Harehills Lane. The house stands alone. Its dark stonework and general dilapidation accentuate its foreboding appearance. Nobody has lived in it for years. Long ago, so the tale goes, it was inhabited by a lone cobbler. His sudden and mysterious disappearance led to many wild rumours. Some said suicide, others murder. Official investigation proved to be in vain. One evening, months later, a couple were passing the neglected house when a sound of hammering smote their ears, no illumination being visible. The couple decided to investigate. Imagine their amazement on beholding, through a window, an aged cobbler working at his last, a pile of boots by his side. This was no isolated incident. Others told of hearing strange hammering. The ghost of Chapeltown was born. I wonder whether there are any Chapeltown or Harehills readers of the Yorkshire Weekly Post who could supply me with further details of the cobbler's ghost. That's from J.P. O'Shaughnessy, from 36 Compton Row, Harehills, Leeds 9.
Oh, wow, we really know where he lives.
Yeah, so we can go and ask him.
Oh, well, I work really close to there, so
yeah,
I'm going to probably be like looking for this address, but also trying to work out where this little house is that the terrifying cobbler's ghost lives
at. So this is a small house at the Chapel Town end of Hare Hills Lane, which still, wow, I assume,
yeah,
still exists.
I think that, I mean, obviously this area is one of those areas that's had slum clearance, all kinds of things going, but I suspect that particular part,
yes,
of Hare Hills is probably a little bit unchanged.
So I just love that little ghost story. So, like,
it's fabulous.
There's a ghost in a window. What more do you want?
It's well worth half a guinea.
And it's well worth having.
What was that word? Something like the sound smoked their ears or something.
Yeah, the sound there was some good. I mean, this is obviously just a guy that's written in, J.P. O'Shaughnessy. Yeah, so he said, I loved the bit that said, "Its dark stonework and dilapidation accentuate its foreboding appearance." Yeah, what did he say? Smoked their ears? Yes, one evening, months later, a couple were passing the neglected house when a sound of hammering smote their ears.
I don't think I've heard that expression
before.
But again, it's one of those turns of phrase that it instantly takes you there. You know
it's
exactly
very
what
creative,
it's getting at.
Very creative writing.
So this was Notes and Queries, so I'm guessing it didn't have to be a ghost story. It just happened.
I don't think so. I think
it.
This must be in... This is probably in response to the Temple Newsome ghost story.
Oh, I see.
Which is in this collection of news cuttings. News cuttings... Have I talked about before on the podcast? I don't know if I have.
Is this the ghost scrapbook?
This is the ghost scrapbook. This is the ghost... It's just called The Ghost. No, it's called... something
it's
weird.
It's called Ghost Stories and
Weird
experiences, Life After Death, etc.
Yeah, so it's from that book, and it's like a... It's a collection of news cuttings by a man called Edwin Hick. And they're all from the 1920s and 1930s. This turns out that it was the weekly Yorkshire Weekly Post. There were just so many newspapers at the time, you just can't keep up. But they all seem to have like this Yorkshire story or Yorkshire ghost story section. That is in response to a story about the Temple Newsome ghost, which I mean we could probably do a whole episode on Temple Newsome ghosts,
yeah,
which I might do in the future because
that
is one of the
yeah.
that's the really good because there's a few, aren't there?
Mm-hmm.
A few good stories.
And there's a great one that is one of, just like in the waxwork, it's one of those, our reporter spent a night in the haunted Temple Newsome house, and it's fantastic.
I went to give a talk there, and one of the wonderful assistant curators, I think she's assistant curator, gave us a tour after and told us some of the stories, and I was so creeped out. it's so lovely inside, and I just went at the weekend actually, and I just love walking around it, and they've got, if you've not seen a picture of it, just look one up because they've got like the like a prayer, haven't they? That's like, sort of like welded to the top of it around the edge.
Yeah, it's so
such
unusual.
A cool,
yeah,
such a cool place. I think
it
it's
is.
Lovely. It's very pretty. And then inside, it's been really well kept, but it's very open, and there's lots of little corridors and long corridors, and they've got lots of original features there from the 1700s, I think it was, isn't it, when it was opened? But yeah, it definitely lends itself to very spooky stories.
The little corridor is what I remember from my visits. I think I must have been slightly behind the scenes at some point. I remember sort of coming out through a door and feeling like I'd walked out from, you know, like a swinging portrait that had just opened onto this corridor. The whole place had that sort of secret passages kind of feel.
Yeah, we were allowed to have a meeting there at one point. And we were like up at the top of the building or somewhere that I've never been before, and this assistant curator had told us this story about one of the rooms up there, and it was really creepy. We weren't in that room, but yeah. So maybe that's something we can come back to. So I think, anyway, my point was, I think this letter is in response to an article that comes a bit earlier, probably a week earlier, about Temple Newsome ghosts.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you want to go back to your last five?
And actually the next one's a haunted house story. So that led into it perfectly. Again, it's got a bit of a slightly spoofy edge because it's called The Haunting of Shawley Rectory. And if you've heard of Borley Rectory, which is one of the most famous haunted houses that have ever existed, especially, well, in this country, obviously the author of this one is playing on that.
Mm-hmm.
And the author of this one's actually Ruth Rendell.
Oh, wow.
Mm. Okay. She's not known for her ghost stories. In fact, she's obviously much better known for her crime stories.
Yeah.
But this one did appear in the Ellery Queen Mystery Magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And it absolutely belongs in the genre. It's what I love about this one is that Ruth Rendell still writes a ghost story in very much a kind of a crime story style. So it's very matter of fact. there's little clues spread throughout, and then there's a resolution at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And also what I like about this one is it takes a sort of familiar sort of ghost story theme. You've probably read stories where there's this kind of time loop situation going on where ghosts are kind of trapped in a kind of a loop where they have to play out their actions or their deaths or something like that. This one kind of plays with that, and it takes it a little bit further, I think. This is why it spoke to me, and takes it to a bit of an unexpected conclusion. As I say, it's about a haunted house, and there's noises heard in this house, and all through the story you're wondering what they are and why. The Yorkshire connection, though, in this, like the title of the story, is quite humorous, because Ruth Rendell, she's obviously decided that, obviously, when you get your main character in the story, they have to hear the ghost story from somebody else, don't they? That's just a classic thing about the ghost story.
Yeah.
It's always like friend of a friend or whatever, my cousin or something. In this story, the main character hears the ghost story from a obviously really like reliable source, and it is of course a very practical Yorkshire woman. That's who tells the story.
Mm-hmm.
So I just like that. She's the epitome of the down-to-earth, reliable narrator is a Yorkshire woman who tells the story in this one. And that story's from 1972, so it's by far
most
up-to-date story on this list.
That's up-to-date for us.
Yeah, in terms of my list and anything else we've talked about on this podcast.
Yeah.
The next story that I'll tell you about is much earlier, 1868. And this story is by a really famous ghost story writer called Joseph Sheridan Le Fanu. I'm not really sure how to pronounce that.
Mm.
He's not even French, he's Irish. He has written quite a few famous stories, including Carmilla, which
you'll
be familiar with because you love your vampire stories.
I do love vampires, yes.
Have you read Carmilla?
I haven't read it. It's a film, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's been the basis of tons of kind of those Hammer erotic vampire movies.
Yeah. Oh, maybe I have read it. I did a whole module at university on vampires in films. So I'm sure it must have come up in that.
Oh,
but yes, I am very aware of...
Is it Daughters of Darkness?
That's it, yes, because that is based on...
That's a great film.
Yes, it is. Really great.
Yeah. I haven't read Carmilla, which is insane, and I'm going to read it around Christmas, I think.
Yes.
But yeah, I think I've heard it kind of goes back to that story in Daughters of Darkness.
I have absolutely seen Daughters of Darkness. You can't forget it.
And that's 1970s?
Yeah, that's definitely 70s. Yeah. Oh, it's so glam. I love it. Oh, I rewatched that.
Well, Le Fanu wrote the story that that's based on.
Mm-hmm.
And he also wrote a really great ghost story that I love. Oh, God, the title's really awkward. I think it's A Strange Event in the Life of Shulkin the Painter.
Mm.
It's just a really clever story. Oddly, he's not a writer that I love. I always struggle with his ghost stories. I find them really difficult. And that was the case with this one as well. Like when I was reading it, I wasn't really sure where it was going or whether I was finding it effective. The story is called Squire Toby's Will. I picked it because it's set in Yorkshire.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it's set on the stagecoach route from York to London, somewhere outside York. And it's great, actually. Having just said that I find his stories difficult, and I did with this one, I think it's a story that really comes together afterwards when you start piecing it together in your mind.
Mm.
And the various spooky happenings, and there's quite a few in this story, and they're quite weird, they all start to make sense. Obviously, it's about an inheritance. It's about two brothers who don't get on, and the father that kind of pitted them against each other in his will. But the story's about kind of redemption and revenge, even from beyond the grave. And it's a pretty good one, actually. So even though it's a bit difficult to read, it's worth sticking with because it leaves you with a lot to sort of think about afterwards.
Yeah, that's quite different from the
Sounds good. And we'll now give you two ghost stories to look out for, especially over winter, because they're both perfect. They're full of kind of snowy landscapes, people lost in the snow, and both of these also come to quite horrific kind of climaxes. And they're both quite early, very early, in fact. And they're both by women. The first one is 1864, Phantom Coach.
Oh, we just had a little flap from
Genie. Did you hear Genie's ears flapping?
Yeah.
This is a new habit of Genie's. He never used to flap his ears, but now he does it quite a lot.
I'm going to share this picture, and he is literally next to the dictaphone. So you you might hear some grooming. Oh,
Yeah, he's definitely going in for a groom now.
Yeah.
That means he's comfortable, so he's obviously enjoying hearing about all these ghostly stories from the local area.
Do you like ghost Are you a ghost?
That would explain his spectral silence.
Yeah. Oh, he's just absolutely showing off now.
It's made me want to know if there's any ghost stories involving cats.
Oh, there must be.
Yeah,
they're quite spooky animals, aren't they?
Yeah, none of them jump into mind, though. I can think of horror films involving cats, like
Yes.
Pet Sematary and stuff, but
yeah.
I'm not thinking of a ghost story involving cats.
Ooh, that may be our next mission to find
out.
Anyway, thank you very much, Jeannie. We've seen you. So.
Noted and moved on. So The Phantom Coach by Amelia B. Edwards is about a traveller who's lost on the Yorkshire moors. And the stories, it makes a lot of, you know, it's coherent and everything, but it also at the same time follows this fantastic kind of dream logic where basically he just has one strange experience after another.
Oh.
And it all gets explained. And yeah, basically first he goes to this creepy house, then he finds himself rushing for the stagecoach to try and get home, and it's the night mail that he's trying to catch. And obviously it's kind of this night mail coach that's haunted,
mm-hmm.
and leads to the scariest scene in the whole story, which is brilliant, and I'm not going to spoil it for you, but
oh.
It's lovely and gruesome. And the second story in this little subgenre is by Elizabeth Gaskell.
Oh.
And it's 1852, and it's called The Old Nurse's Story.
Oh, I've heard of this.
I just was desperate to include the story on this list. The Yorkshire link is tenuous.
Okay,
it just mentions some Yorkshire locations, but the whole theme of this story is so northern.
Mm-hmm.
It's set in a house on the moors, it's Wuthering Heights, it's Jane Eyre, it's all of that.
Everyone's wearing flat caps.
Everybody's wearing flat caps or massive dresses that they can't get through doorways in.
Yeah,
it's the perfect ghost story.
Mm-hmm.
When you finish it, you feel like you've read a novel. It packs so much in. The characters are great. The gist of the story is very sort of turn of the screw. It's a young nursemaid who takes an orphan with her to live in this family home that's haunted also by a spectral child. It's got everything. It's got the snowy landscapes, the servants who are terrified but won't explain what's going on. And what I love about this story as well is it kind of reaches its peak of terror and it just leaves you there.
Ooh.
It doesn't go into a big explanation afterwards. It just ends with you at the height of the horror.
I think
it's
I like that.
Great.
I think I like that,
yeah. I think if you're a fan of any of those Haunting of Hill House or Bly Manor Netflix shows, you love The Old Nurse's Story. It's very Crimson Peak.
Ooh.
Very, I was going to say Rebecca, but it's nothing like Rebecca. It's just set in an old house. Who's this Rebecca? And so my last story,
mm-hmm.
I thought I'd bring us back to Yorkshire properly, and indeed Leeds, and also to that Temple Newsom connection.
Yes,
that
oh,
we
I know
chatted
it is,
about.
Yes.
So,
oh yeah, of course.
I'm guessing that you've heard of a little book called Lord Halifax's Ghost.
I absolutely
book.
Have. So you gave me a copy that you had that I still got, and it's got an amazing cover with a skull on it.
It's
a skeleton or a skull.
It's
I
like
feel
a
like
photo,
I want to say it's
it?
Like a skull in a top hat, but I might
could,
have made that.
Yeah, no, that's ringing a bell in me.
I do still have it.
It's one of those cheesy 1970s paperbacks, isn't it?
I love them, yeah.
And actually the book is nothing like that. The book
no,
was
it's
published
not.
In the 30s. Well, it was published in two volumes. The first one was definitely 1937.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the second volume came a year or two later. And Lord Halifax himself is not from Yorkshire, but he famously had a big house in Garraby, which I think is East Yorkshire. And he was also connected by marriage to the Temple Newsom estate and spent many kind of stays at Temple Newsom.
Yeah.
It's rumoured and recounted that he saw the ghost of the Grey Lady during one of his stays at Temple Newsom, and I think that's something we should cover, as you say, in a future episode.
Yeah, so
episode.
I think this is what that Temple Newsom article is about, that, because it's about one of the people that would... Was she a maid or something? She's saying, I don't believe in this, but Lord Halifax says this, so I'm going to stay up and listen for it or something. But yeah, his stories are really good.
He was fascinated.
Seems like a
bit
of a joker.
Yeah.
Big, like a prankster.
That's right. I think he liked to entertain his kids by dressing up and telling them ghost stories and all sorts of things. And the ghost stories he collected were the ones that he thought might be true.
Mm-hmm.
But the interesting thing is, in his ghost book, he included a ghost story that he'd written, a fictional one. And it supposedly it's based on his house of Garraby. The descriptions of the house and the layout, apparently I've never been, but apparently I just like it. And I thought I'd finish off by reading you a little bit from his ghost story.
I'm just going to pause for a second. Why are you interested in this?
Just to clarify, it's going to be you going.
Are you going to be? Oh, don't you like that? Thank you.
Oh, the teeth coming out now.
Not just yet.
Oh, the teeth will come out.
Yeah, they feel like they might. I'm just going to move this. I'm going to hold it. I don't want you to get you going for the wire.
Oh no! Would it help if I came over to that side?
Right. Okay. Please continue.
So this is from the opening of Lord Halifax's only, as far as I'm aware, fictional ghost story that he wrote, and he published it under the title Colonel P's Ghost Story, and that's the letter P. He's not like named after a P or something. I've ruined it. I've ruined the story before I even started. But yeah, so. Story is written by Lord Halifax himself, a.k.a. Charles Lindley Wood. That's his real name. He's actually Chancellor of the Exchequer. Mm. He introduces his ghost story with this fantastic little kind of rumination on what ghosts are and you know, what might cause them.
Mm.
So I hope you'll indulge me as I read this out.
I just think it's great.
Okay. So the ghost story itself isn't that great. It's quite weird, and it doesn't make much sense, but I think he's playing with the genre a little bit and trying to incorporate a lot of his interests. But as I say, it's brilliantly written, and this is the beginning. Where are the dead? Those who have loved us, and those whom we have loved, and those to whom we may have done some irreparable injury. Are they gone from us forever, or do they return? Are they still amongst us, possessed of that undefined, mysterious, and awful existence which the ancient world attributed to the ghosts of the departed? Are there, among the dead, those whose love can still protect our weaknesses? Are there those whose troubled and unquiet spirits are permitted to disturb our peace and avenge their wrongs? Do the dead indeed make themselves felt in the spots they frequented when alive? Is it they whose tread is heard at night on the stairs, and whose presence at certain moments makes solitude impossible? What is implied in the term the netherworld? What are the possibilities suggested by the phrase things under the earth? What underlines the stories so constantly repeated of sounds heard at night within the lonely burial mounds on the Yorkshire wolds? Between this world and that other which escapes our senses, we can neither explain the connecting link nor admit an impassable barrier. This, however, is certain. Whether it be a dream or a fact that the dead still haunt our earthly life, we're all conscious at times of an apprehension of things invisible, and of an undefined fear lest, out of the darkness which surrounds us, powers lurking at our side may suddenly reveal themselves, and we be left helpless in their hands, exposed to all the unknown possibilities of the unseen world.
That's lovely, isn't it?
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
The whole story is as well written as that. It's just a bit of a strange one. But I do recommend it.
Mm.
So that's Colonel P's Ghost Story. A hard one to find, but one that's well worth it.
Thank you so much. They all sound fabulous. I can't believe you managed to get through all of those in a month.
Oh gosh, I read probably 30 more. That's all I did all of October. Watch scary films
Wow.
and read scary stories.
We'll have a little discussion about scary films after I share my final story, which is going to totally ruin the mood because it's ridiculous, but I love it. So this is, I can't quite figure out where this is from because I've not saved it very well. But this is again from it'll be either the Yorkshire Post or the Weekly Post, some Yorkshire Post anyway. And it caught my eye because of the title, and it's just as great as it sounds. It's very, very short. It's very, very silly. And this is Legend of Bat Pigeon.
Bat Pigeon.
So here we go. Harrison Ainsworth's poem tells of Bat Pigeon, a barber at Ripon, who obtained from the sexton a skull which he sawed in half to make a shaving basin. The first day Bat Pigeon put the weird basin to use, the customers were dumb with amazement, and Bat Pigeon, as usual, to rest went that night, but he soon started up a terrible fright. Lo, giving the curtains and bedcloths a pull, a ghost he beheld, wanting half of its skull. Unmannerly barber, the spectre exclaimed. To desecrate bone, houses art... I'm going to start that bit again. Unmannerly barber, the spectre exclaimed. to desecrate bone houses art thou not ashamed? Thy crown in shivers, base varlet I'll crack, unless on the instant my own I get back. There it lies on the table, Bat quakingly said. Sure a skull cannot matter when one is dead. Such a skull as thine may not, thou addlepate fool, but a shaver of clowns for a night is no rule. With this, the wrath spectre its brain pan clapped on, and holding it fast, in a twinkling was gone. But ere through the keyhole the phantom could rush, Bat perceived it had taken the soap and the brush. When the sexton next morn went the charnel house round, the great yellow skull in its old place he found, and twixt its lank jaws where they grinningly ope, as in mockery struck, at the brush and the soap.
That's just brilliant.
Isn't it good?
It's worthy of Lewis Carroll.
Isn't it?
It's brilliant.
So I'm going to try and figure out where that's come from, because it seems to be like in a little cluster of other little weird stories. It just made me laugh. And like, I don't know what the, why is this barb called Bat Pigeon?
Well, that's what is confused it me.
Bat Pigeon, a barber at Ripon. Is it because it kind of rhymes with Ripon?
Oh, is that the only reason? I assumed that Bat Pigeon was going to be the ghost or something.
Yeah, I thought, I was like, Bat Pigeon's going to be like a weird creature.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not, it's just a barber that has got a skull.
That's so distracting from what's actually a fantastic little poem. I feel like if they'd just given him a normal name,
yeah,
that would be a more famous poem.
Yeah.
That's brilliant. What a little find.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it? And that again is from the Weird Stories newspaper cuttings. I just love that.
That's
it's
funny.
A little cute one. Even though I stumbled over that as well. Them calling the top of the skull the brain pan.
Yeah.
With its brain pan clapped on. But then it was back again in the morning, so did he really see it or not? I don't know. And he stole his soap and just gave it back.
That's
not really much of a...
The little rhymes. Are just
I know.
In that poem like, and they just make it.
Yeah, yeah. So that's the end of our little story share. And I enjoyed it very much.
So did I. Thank you for finding those
stories.
Jean is
still doing a little... Some licking of the tail and legs near the speakers. So sorry if you get that any noise. I don't think you will. It's very...
Oh.
He's kicked the dictaphone.
He's
very quiet. So I was just going to end with like a little bit of lightness, even though that was quite a light episode. He's just got his feet all over. Can you not? He's not bothered. He must be very relaxed.
He must be.
So I wanted to chat a little bit about... I know we're doing this in retrospect, and it would be nice to do it in October, but it doesn't matter.
It's
Halloween
for Christmas.
All year round.
Oh, it is. It is as far as I'm concerned, anyway.
Yeah. So we were just going to have a really quick discussion about what horror films we watched in October. I had such good intentions. I had loads of new stuff downloaded that I was going to watch. The first thing that I watched, which was on like the 5th of October, was Beetlejuice, which I've seen a million times. And then I really didn't watch anything else until right at the end of the month, and I watched Hellraiser.
Wow.
Which, I mean, I've seen, and I love, but like, going back and watching it was, I think it's really good. I thought it was good. It's very strange. I kind of forgot about, you know, the man with no skin.
Yeah.
That bit of the storyline. I think to say it's called Hellraiser, you just think of the one guy. Actually, he's in it for about 3 scenes.
Yeah, I think that's one of the most interesting things about Hellraiser. The fact that, well, it's just so British, isn't it?
Mm.
It's up there in terms of, you know, its famousness with Nightmare on Elm Street and Friday the 13th with its villain, Pinhead. But the first Hellraiser is just such a kind of British film.
Yeah, and it's like a little bit sci-fi as well.
Yeah.
With the monsters and the like this other realm. But yeah, going back and watching it now, I can't even remember when I first watched it, but it was a long time ago. Enjoy it very much.
I do. I think it's one that you can always go back to and that will still kind of surprise you, even though you've seen it before, because
yeah.
It's got that clever trick of being memorable,
mm-hmm.
but the story itself, you kind of...
Yeah, I'd kind of forgotten
yeah.
what it was about entirely, I think. Yeah. And then I went on to watch... Halloween 2, Halloween 3, Halloween 4, and Did I watch Halloween 5? Did
you
I
did.
Tell you?
I think I made you
and
because
Halloween
I said
5.
It continued the story of Halloween 4.
So Halloween 2, it's the one in the hospital, isn't it?
Yes, that's the one that kind of picks
good.
Up.
Yeah, that was quite good. Halloween 3, I don't know why I've missed this little chunk out of my Halloween watching. But Halloween 3 is just something else, isn't it?
Yeah, I used to hate it, but it's kind of grown on me because, as you're right, it's just...
And we were saying before this started, we were saying, why does it end like that? It just really abruptly ends, and I was watching and I went into the kitchen to go and grab something and came back and it had done. And it was the credits. I'm like, oh, I thought
terrible
there was going to be a little
ending.
Bit more to that.
Just stops.
So, I don't know, at least I can look back and have a little laugh about it. It doesn't fit in with any of the others. I don't really know how or why it's part of the Halloween franchise. But then I watched Halloween 4, which is, what happens in Halloween 4?
That's one little girl, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
Jamie's niece?
Did
she
win
Jamie.
Some kind of award because she should have done?
She's great, isn't
she? She was so good. She was genuinely believable as being, like, a terrified little girl. It was very good acting.
I hope she wasn't just terrified on the set
of
the film. Traumatised.
And then the one after that was 5, which was... What happens in that one?
That more or less picks
she's,
up from
yes,
4, doesn't
she's
it?
In the... And she's lost her speech and she's in the hospital.
Yes.
I thought they were both quite good and quite scary.
Quite atmospheric in a kind of a lovely Octoberish Halloween-y way as
well,
especially
and
the following four.
Yes, we texted, didn't we, when I was watching them, and we said how bad the mask is in both of
bad.
Those. It's bad, it's like melty face
and
mask.
It's kind of hanging out of his collar, and you're like, oh,
yeah.
Just distracted
like,
by the badness.
Why won't he die? Like, it's relentless. I know it's kind of part of the thing, but... He would have been dead in like the first film, I think.
Well, they kind of address it in the new film, Halloween Kills.
Okay.
But even in fact, addressing it just makes it worse because I think what I took
away
from that,
ridiculous.
Yeah, is scene after scene of people kind of mortally wounding him, and then the fact that he doesn't die becomes the plot point. So I'm assuming this final Halloween film we're building towards is going to basically explain that. Maybe.
I don't know if you've watched any of them already. I've watched a couple, but on Netflix they have a series called The Movies That Made Us.
Oh, yes.
And they've just done the Halloween one.
Oh, have they?
Yeah, it's quite good. I mean, it's very, like, I find them very, like, snappy and a bit too snappy for me. Like, I want to go deep with them.
Yeah.
But it's very, like, this happened, and then this happened. And then they get... I mean, there's also one for Aliens, which is great because I love Aliens.
Yeah, who doesn't?
And Friday the 13th as well is on there, but I've not watched that one yet. But the Halloween one is good. It's interesting because they kind of find people to interview. It's not like the stars of the film or anything.
Mm.
It's people who worked on the sets and stuff, which is interesting. But it's very, like, it's very fast-paced, I think, for, like, a TikTok generation, which
oh,
I am not. I think that's why it kind of jumps between stuff, but it's really interesting.
It sounds. I've not really seen that much about Halloween. Really.
Well, it's worth watching. So I watched that the other day. I think I need to rewatch it because it was a bit too fast and I didn't really take it in. But it was good about how they got it cast and how they didn't have any money and what it was going to be called and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really good. So that was my viewing, to be honest.
It's very logical working your way through the Halloween films.
Yeah, it was kind
Halloween.
Of by accident. I like to say, if I'm especially on a Sunday, I always get up really early, just every day, because I'm a grandma. But I can sit on a Sunday afternoon and, like, potter around and do various things, and I'll just have films on, and I just started watching. I watched the second one, and then I think maybe a couple of days after, which was a Sunday, I just watched the other, like, the next three, and enjoyed myself.
Yeah, well, they follow along quite nicely, don't they?
Yes, they do.
Above part of number 3.
I'm going to go back and watch it again, I think. Maybe in the new year, or maybe I'll wait till next year and watch it and see with fresh eyes if I can come round to it a bit more, like maybe you have. So that was me, and I had all these grand plans for watching the new things that have come out. Like, didn't watch the new Candyman, didn't watch new Halloween, didn't watch what's the one that everyone was on about? The brand new one that was... It was everywhere. What the blooming heck is it called? It's got a really good twist in.
Oh, I want to know what this is now.
I'm sure you'll have seen it.
Is it a cinema film? Or
yes.
Is it, what is this? It's going to be something I've not seen. Oh, is it Malignant?
Malignant.
I've not seen it. Oh. It seemed to come out in September for about a week. Oh, and then really? I wanted to go and see it and it had already gone. I think it'll be out on streaming services.
So that was another one I intended to watch. Didn't. I'll come back to them. So yeah, I'm sure you had a much more productive Halloween watch.
I did watch loads of horror films all of October. I caught up with some old favourites like you did. But I thought the ones I mentioned actually are new ones, because I made a real effort to catch up with the kind of new stuff that was coming out on Netflix and Prime and stuff. And there were a few that I really enjoyed. There was a slasher film that actually it was kind of doing the rounds, everyone was watching it, called There's Someone Inside Your House. It was great. I really enjoyed it. It was it felt like a new Scream film, which, you know, every slasher that comes out is marketed as the new Scream film.
Yeah.
But for once, this kind of did almost feel a little bit like that.
Mm-hmm.
It was great. I really enjoyed it. Have you seen that one?
No, I haven't.
Look out for it.
Mm-hmm. I will.
And then also around Halloween, Blumhouse also released a little batch of titles straight to Amazon Prime. I think they do 4 a year. And I saw 2 of them this year, but one of them, again, I really enjoyed. It was a vampire movie, so you might like it.
Yes.
And it's called Black as Night.
Ooh.
It's great. It's I don't want to give too much away about this one, but it gave me all the sort of classic Fright Night type vibes whilst feeling really current, and it felt a bit like the new Candyman. And it was a lot of fun, and I felt like it had something to say as well. It felt a little bit original.
Ooh,
okay. That really brought me back to the vampire genre. I really enjoyed that one. And then my last one that I would also recommend that I feel doesn't get enough, well, maybe it does, maybe I've just not looked in the right places, but there's a Mexican film from a few years ago that's a ghost story, and it's called Tigers Are Not Afraid, which isn't a great title, so maybe it's that's holding
You've
it
told
back
me
a
about
bit.
This, and I still haven't watched it. You told me about it ages ago.
It's so good. It is. I watched it again this year thinking, oh, will I watch it? And think, oh, you know, it's not as good as the first time.
Yeah.
It holds up. It's just like Candyman, it's one of those perfectly realised, logical ghost stories that just all make sense, but really kind of tries to scare the heck out of you as it's happening.
What's the premise of it?
It's about a little girl whose mum is murdered by a cartel, and she is adopted by some street kids.
Oh.
But there are a lot of ghosts in the story. There's a lot of very real life threat as well.
Oh,
and it's just perfectly put together. It's so unusual, but
it's
good.
Such an unusual plot.
I feel like it's one for fans of Pan's Labyrinth. But it's different to that, but it does that whole real world fantasy world intermingling in a really good way.
Interesting.
It's very spooky and very good.
Thank you. I'll take all these recommendations away and watch and read the stories as well. Definitely will read the stories. We can tell the story. We were supposed to be meeting in the library tonight, but we couldn't because of a bit of a disaster. I won't go into it, but we were going to meet there and we were going to have some of these books out that Ross was talking about, but we couldn't go, so I'm now at Ross's house, but it's worked out fine. We got a cat.
We've been haunted by a demonic entity. Leeds Central Library and a local family history department, what a great place for finding spooky old books and newspapers. We will have to go there.
I will make a point of going and taking some photos of the books that you talked about.
Oh, fantastic.
And then we can, I should be there maybe next week, so before this comes out. So, yeah, thank you again for being my guest.
You're very welcome. I enjoyed it very much.
Yeah, and hopefully we'll have you on again to talk about something else. I'll make you do more work, and then you can come back and give me more stories.
For the Oliver Onion special.
Oh, yeah. Well, we'll do an Oliver Onion special, and we'll do a Temple Newsom special. Temple Newsom ghosts. So thank you again, and bye from me, and bye from Jeannie Cat, and bye from Ross.
And goodbye.
Bye. So there we go. I really hope you enjoyed that episode as much as I enjoyed recording it. I sincerely hope it's made you want to go and read at least one of the stories that Ross mentioned in our chat. I'm certainly going to. Now, this episode was recorded in early November 2021 as a Halloween in retrospect episode, but as alluded to in the episode, Everyday Spooky Season Over Here, and as I record this now, it is the 3rd of January 2022. So, Happy New Year to you. I hope you did as you decided over the holiday period, whether you celebrate or not, if you are working or resting, whatever. I just hope that you are happy and healthy. As you probably realised,
if you've listened to other episodes of No Heathen Land, I haven't been able to keep a schedule as such for the podcast. I'm putting this down to the global pandemic, but really, I think I've not been as organised as I could have been. So as it's New Year, I'm just putting it out there that I intend to release an episode a month this year, so I hope you're ready for more. Going back to the episode, I've put a list of all the titles and authors of the stories in the description, which you can find in whatever app you're listening to this podcast on, or you can find it on the Acast page, which is also linked in the description with more information. I put some photos of the Yorkshire Ghost Stories newspaper headers on the Twitter page. As always, the handle is @NoHeathenLand, so go and have a look at those if you wish. And as I've also said, I do have a photo of the Strid at Bolton Abbey, so I'll post that too, along with the covers of some of the books that Ross talked about, the ones that I can get hold of anyway, including my own copy of Lord Halifax's Ghost Stories that Ross very kindly gave me a few years ago. And I'm pleased to report I was right about the cover featuring a skeleton in a top hat. So thanks again to my guest Ross and to Luke, who painstakingly does the final edits on my rambles for each episode. Thank you so much for listening. I appreciate you. Goodbye.